Oh, yes. Everything is good. Hey, man, we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it all today. We're going to talk about winning, losing, and all of it not really mattering because it's just one big organic globule from which you extract what you need.
For very little money.
Today we're going to be talking about White Men Can't Jump. And as always, it's Gabe Pacheco here with Eat, Pray, Judge. And I'm joined by my co-host, the one and only
Sammy Hamarne.
That's right, the king of the court. Mr. Sammy Hamarne is in the house.
I feel like I'm back in the saddle, dude. This is my first episode in a while.
Yeah,
took a week off.
You took 1 week off, and luckily Zilla Vodnaz was here to hold it down while you were gone, and we discussed Candyman.
I know, I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, me too. Well, that should be coming out for Halloween. Well, it will have come out for Halloween. And here we are in the future.
It's actually coming out day of Halloween.
Yeah, can you believe it?
I can.
So, and today in the Greenpoint studio, we've got the one and only Andrew Charles, or as he likes to be called by all of his friends, which is us. Buck.
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me back.
Welcome back, Buck.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Buck,
we're really excited that you're here today because I think we're picking a movie that we all, a consensus, decided to do together.
Yeah.
White Men Can't Jump.
Thank you for doing this.
We've been talking, Gabe and I had mentioned this one a while back.
I remember you saying you guys had it in mind.
And I wasn't sure whether you had seen it or not, and I didn't realize that it was a... holds a dear place in your heart.
Special place in my heart. I mean, this is probably my favorite movie of all time.
That's a win-win.
Yeah.
That's a win-win-win right there.
Yeah, yeah. Not a win or lose or whatever, but it's
all
winning.
Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose,
sometimes
you
tie. Sometimes you bet $2,000 on a basketball game and you lose it, and your girlfriend leaves you, and then sometimes you win it, and then she still leaves you.
Sometimes when you lose, you win, man. Sometimes when
you
win.
You win.
Yeah. Yo, gibberish wisdom.
I'm just trying to confuse you,
Billy.
Yeah. She reminds me a little bit of like Wu-Tang Clan 5%er wisdom.
Right.
Yeah.
that rhetoric.
Encyclopedia.
That chew stick rhetoric.
Yes. So you've seen, Buck, you've seen this movie like two dozen, three dozen?
Maybe four dozen times.
That's a lot of dozens.
Yeah. Sure. The dozens.
That's the dozens.
It's one of those, you know, you're not feeling too good days for me, you know, and you just throw on White Man Can't Jump and...
Yeah. Yes.
And it's funny. I mean, I remember seeing the movie when I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
like when it came out. And I remember, I don't remember why. You don't know how to comprehend certain things when you're that age, like 12, 13 years old. And I remember liking it for some reason, like a lot. And then I just had no idea what it really was, ultimately.
It was just cool. It was the first cool thing. Like, I don't know. Like, I was younger when it came. Obviously, like, I didn't see it until I was like 5 or 6. It came out in 92. I was born in 91. But I saw it early, like, because I was a basketball fan anyways.
Right.
So I saw it, and I already loved basketball. And it was the first cool thing that I saw.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this movie is great regardless of your age. It's kind of a timeless film, and it's also a movie that, well, I think it's timeless. We'll find out over the course of this interview if it holds up to, you know, but it was hot in the 90s.
Mm.
Is it still hot in 2019? Mm. We'll find out. What I do know is that seeing it as a kid in middle school, it tickled everything for me. Even though I wasn't like a huge sports guy, I think after this movie, I played a lot of basketball.
On the courts.
In my alley. We had, you know, over the garage, down the street, in the alley, we had like one hoop and we'd all play. And so street ball.
Yes.
It definitely didn't get me involved in like school basketball games.
The organized.
Right. Nah, but if it was street ball, the anarchy of street ball, the style, the trash talking.
Yes.
The fact that your body size type, your asthma, none of that matters to street ball.
Ain't no fouls in this game, son.
Yeah. And as a middle schooler, like looking at the style, you know, Billy Hoyle's big sneakers, you know, the flashy
pumps.
Outfits, everything about all that really was great to watch as a kid. And the soundtrack, even if you don't like basketball, you can like the soundtrack, you can like the style, you can like the visuals, and just the storyline. And it's a story about friendship.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then watching it as a sports fan, I don't know, you know, maybe you guys can attest to that a little bit more than, you know, me, cause I didn't really pay attention. I just like the beauty of watching the slow-mo basketball.
Oh, the slow-mo. It's poetry in motion.
Right. Exactly. And then watching it now, it's like, oh, this is a movie about relationships, about alcoholism, about compulsive gambling.
Yeah, exactly.
About race relations.
It's layered. It's got everything.
It does, actually.
Yes. Yeah. So, but, you know, so it's a movie that the costumes were great. The cinematography is great.
Yeah.
It's a movie about con men.
Yes.
Which is something I can identify with. Con
schemes.
Men.
Schemes.
Scheming dudes. It reminds me of The Hustler. Updated for the 90s with a salt and pepper like race relations thing going on.
With the backdrop of it, yeah, of course.
And being a hip hop head, mm-hmm. this is also like the that Native Tongues era of mm-hmm. Afrocentric hip hop being in at least black pop culture.
No question.
You know, so even though the soundtrack doesn't really reflect that, the look does.
No question. It also has
little Cypress Hill in there.
Yeah.
There's a little bit, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Which is more of that West Coast gangster.
Exactly.
You know, this took place there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes.
In the jungle, Compton, Watts.
Crenshaw. Oh, that's okay. That's specifically where the jungle is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where the Vista View.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There ain't no Vista and there ain't no view. And
there sure as hell ain't no Vista, no view.
Yeah, so this movie, White Man Can't Jump stars the one and only Wesley Snipes. At the height of his powers, man.
Yeah.
And Wesley Snipes has had a roller coaster of a career and a life up to this point. This was him as he was first breaking out, because like right around this time was Major League.
Yep.
And he played Willie Mays Hayes
yep.
in that.
Yep.
So he's already a superstar mm-hmm. coming out the gate.
Mm-hmm.
But then in this movie, I feel like this is a character that could have been played by... He plays Sidney Dean.
Yep.
And this is a character that could have been played by Eddie Murphy.
There's and a few.
And I don't mean that I would want to swap out Wesley Snipes for Eddie Murphy, but he's got the same level of like charisma,
mm-hmm.
clowning,
mm-hmm.
athleticism, and command.
Mm.
You know, he's a comedic character, but he's not he doesn't play self-depreciating.
I get that.
He also doesn't seem athletic. And I know this is our second Ron Shelton movie.
Yeah.
Ron Shelton directed Bull Durham. Yep, so Bull Durham. He likes, you know, sports-based relationship films, whether they be between men and women or friends or yeah. whoever. He likes to give his actors a lesson in like whatever sport they're playing. So he tries them out based on their physical prowess. So mm-hmm. he tried out Keanu Reeves, yep. David Duchovny, all these yep. other guys, and these two seemed to fit. They also worked with former pro ball players to
they
get
did.
To the level. Yeah. So all their instructors said at the end of this, they could become Division III basketball players.
Apparently, Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes were in another movie together before this. Can't remember the name of it now.
Wildcats.
Goldie which Hawn. Is a football movie, isn't it?
Yes.
That's actually...
So this is Wesley Snipes' trifecta of sports films, actually, with this one, because
right.
he did the football, he did the baseball, Major League, and now he's doing basketball.
Right.
So he wanted to actually do this. He wanted to complete that trifecta of sports movies, and he worked with Woody as well. And apparently, in the auditions, Wesley left Keanu Reeves out to dry during some pickup game and
yeah.
made Woody Harrelson look good because he wanted his boy back on the set with him.
They actually said that Woody was the better. Woody played like
college. He played college ball in Indiana.
Like a little bit of college ball, yeah. basketball. Yeah, of course, in Indiana.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's interesting.
Yep.
They went up to Charlie Sheen too.
Charlie Sheen was there too. I can't see Charlie Sheen playing ball at all.
He said he felt no affinity towards basketball. Like the way he did about baseball. He's like, I'd have no fun making this movie because I don't really love basketball, and that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't see him
right. No.
looking good on the court.
He's a better pitcher than.
I mean that's the mark of a good job good casting job.
Sure.
I mean if you get people that you can't picture other people in that role,
mm-hmm.
like I think Eddie Murphy could have done. Eddie Murphy might have been too big at the time.
Sure.
To do
sure.
this movie.
But I guess I'm just getting at he's just channeling this sort of combination of qualities
yeah.
that also made Eddie Murphy so unique.
Yeah.
You know, and like Wesley Snipes is so great at being both in charge. In the same way that Eddie Murphy could do that.
Yeah.
And also being funny.
Yeah.
You know, and clowning.
Yep.
Like,
definitely.
Because it's really hard, I think, to be a comedic actor who is also, has placed such high status.
Yes.
You know, most comedic actors play like the sort of a fall guy, mm-hmm. or like a klutz,
the butt of the jokes.
Yep.
Yes, yeah.
And totally. Woody Harrelson almost was that for this, but like the way he gave it back to Wesley in this movie was fantastic. Just as because Wesley would say, you know, something about your mom's an astronaut. You know what I mean? And Woody would go, my mom's too drunk to be an astronaut.
Yeah.
That stuff is the perfect combination of two characters. You know what I mean? Oh, you're too stupid to understand. You're getting insulted.
That's right.
It's just fantastic.
And Woody is coming from Woody Harrelson, who plays Billy Hoyle in this, was coming off of Cheers, which is like number one sitcom at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like so hard to break out of because, like, you know, Kramer wasn't able to do drama. And this is before, let's say, like before his meltdown. But Kramer on Seinfeld wasn't able to break out of being Kramer to go get into the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the like next door neighbor from Family Ties.
Mm.
He tried to like break out of his role as the goofy next door neighbor and be in films. Didn't work out. It's really tough. But Woody was able to make that transition and not only make it not playing a stereotype,
sure,
but like transcending that stereotype.
Yeah. I think it might be easier if you're like the seventh lead. In a pop.
Exactly, that's what I was thinking.
You know, whereas Kramer, there's like four people there, or Costanza, those guys have so much, you know, trouble.
Mm.
But this could be, Woody was like a, you know, not a bit player, but down the line, seven from the other, exactly.
Well, and think about like Kelsey Grammer wasn't able to do it.
No,
like,
he had to keep being Frasier for the rest different iterations.
It's also because they're so good at that character that it doesn't even. And he was great in Cheers, obviously. It was Woody Boyd, I think he was in Cheers. But I also think the sports thing helped him get across that line as well because he was able to step in and show athleticism to him as well than to just being behind the bar or whatever he was doing, you know what I mean? And that gave people the recognition, oh, okay, Woody Harrelson is versatile in more than one way, you know what I mean? Like,
forgive me if I never watched Cheers. Is Woody like a bartender?
Yeah.
He's a bartender. Okay. I wasn't sure.
He's like, he reminds me a little bit of the guy, like the tour guide in 30 Rock. Like he plays like the small town dude
right.
who shows up in Boston, in the big city, mm-hmm. and now he's a bartender. So he's kind of like the dumb, innocent Rube,
yep. bumpkin,
the Rube.
Yeah. He plays the chump on the show,
exactly.
You know? And so he's always saying the honest, right thing
mm-hmm.
because he's that guy.
His morals are so high.
Yeah. So it's cool to see him. And the thing is Woody's got that darkness, man, underneath anger,
yep.
Mm-hmm. something. And I remember when he was in Natural Born Killers and it was such a surprise because I remembered him from Cheers and then he's in Natural Born Killers. And I saw interviews with Oliver Stone being like, yeah, him and Juliette Lewis, right? They've got this, they're playing a little bit against type, but they've both got this darkness.
Darkness.
And so to watch this guy who went from being the most lovable character on a sitcom
yep.
to being a psychopathic mass murderer
yeah.
who you root for
yeah.
was just so awesome.
I mean, how many people have gotten lost in the typecasting world of Hollywood? Like, it's got to be everyone.
I think a lot of people.
At that point, like, you take whatever job you get.
Yeah.
That's not who you are.
Yeah.
Like, fuck, please, I can't eat.
Listen, I think a lot of people actually are probably okay with it just because they're probably making money off it. But the people who don't, who transcend that, are the people that are just the icons.
That's right.
Dude, you can pay me $30,000 to have a recurring role as a terrorist, and I would take that.
Absolutely. Give me 8 seasons of The Terrorist.
I'm saying the same thing. Just Allahu Akbaring.
Syndication.
Right. I'm still cashing these checks. Residuals, baby.
I'm eating pork with that.
Them funds.
And so they work together, and this is their, and they've made a film after this too, Money Train.
They did do Money Train, that's right.
And I never saw that, so what, you know.
I'd never seen it either.
I can't say that I've seen it.
Who
either.
Knows?
They said that, Wesley Snipes said that during the making of this film, White Man Can't Jump, that he created a lifelong brother, friendship.
Yeah, they seem very close.
Yeah, spiritual brothership. They said they had some times, like.
Yeah, and it's I kind of wish that Wesley Snipes didn't have so many run-ins with the law after this and have to go to jail for tax evasion because that really puts a pause on your career, you know?
Yeah. My girlfriend asked me, what happened to Wesley Snipes? He was in jail.
Yeah,
he did go to jail for the tax evasion.
He did. Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
before man. That, he got arrested for a high speed chase with cops.
Did he?
Yeah, and then before that, he got arrested for having a loaded weapon. So
do you think he actually thought he was Blade at one point in his life? He woke up and he was like,
or he thought he was what's my man's name from New Jack City?
Nino Brown.
Nino Brown.
Yeah. So this was a big deal for Wesley Snipes because it transformed actually both of them into more leading men.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's this is one of the most iconic buddy films.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
For me,
I loved him
as well. Mm-hmm. Their chemistry is unstoppable.
It's crazy, man. We just did another Black Wesley and white Snipes movie,
buddy films,
and then we just did another Woody Harrelson movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But as a buddy film, this is a unique one because it's about race. There's race is a big component in it too, but they don't solve the problem, which I like.
Because there's no solution to that problem.
It right. keeps going like in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually getting worse.
Yeah. I love that in the same way that 48 Hours had like it was a racially charged film.
Yeah.
This movie has that charge that never gets diffused by the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they stay they're friends in this, but there is still, you know, I mean, the LA riots happened right after this.
Yeah.
You're saying that, yeah, so the movie came out in 92.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Another year we've covered just a whole bunch.
So we don't really need to go through it too much, but because Falling Down came out the same year, which we've covered.
Falling Down, yeah, technically it was filmed during the riots, came out in 93.
Sure.
Which we covered. Great movie. If you ever want to watch anything racially charged,
yeah,
go ahead and watch Falling Down.
And I feel like in a lot of our reviews, L.A. is a character in the film as well.
No question.
Yeah.
So just like we did with Falling Down, L.A. is huge in that. But in this, man, like, Buck, you already brought it up. The jungle,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's here. Venice Beach.
Venice Beach, Muscle Beach, yep.
All that, dude. It's so cool to see L.A. represented like this.
Yeah.
And I don't know what Venice Beach is like now. You know, there's a lot of tech bro money that's getting invested into it.
Mm-hmm.
It the whole character of it's probably going to change if it hasn't already completely. Mm-hmm. But in the night, I spent some time on Venice Beach in the 90s, and it was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I went maybe in 2009 or something like that, and it still had that little bit of, I felt like I was in White Man Can't Jump,
yeah.
But also still didn't, you know what I mean? It was a bit too...
Well, there's like, if you walk around down there at any time, there's going to be like a Pepsi or a Coca-Cola commercial being filmed.
Yep, all the time.
Because most of LA, you can't walk around, and that's like this one place where people from all walks of life can spend some time, and it's got that gritty like counterculture feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
I always liked I liked the very brief time I spent there.
Mm-hmm.
But as like an 80s and 90s kid, LA was like the peak of culture at that time. Like it was like the cool stuff, even the surfing, skateboarding,
right.
Wearing jams, neon clothes,
right.
Blonde weird kids. Like that was like what was. You know, perceived as cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think before, like right around, I don't know when it started to shift. Hip hop changed it because New York always seemed artsy to me.
Mm.
You know, like Broadway theater people. It was sure. Like a different vibe, cool in a different, you know, street way.
Sure.
But LA was like cool culture. Like everything seemed cooler. Like I was like, you guys have sun all the time and beaches.
Yeah.
Dogs well, that skateboard.
Around the exact same time, we've got Point Break came out the year before, which and extreme sports started becoming a really big deal.
Yeah, true.
And skateboarding, at least if you know, its origins of being cool come from the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you've got surfing, skating, basketball, West Coast hip hop is starting to emerge as a force.
Yeah, you mean the extreme sports being more noticeably, you know, recognized by mainstream people.
Yeah, that's right.
Because, I mean, people have been doing that stuff forever.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
We're getting popular and people wanting to do stuff like that, of course.
That, yeah, totally.
Yeah. And I don't know. I wasn't paying attention to basketball at this time. So I don't know how the intersection of like real NBA basketball versus what's happening in White Men Can't Jump.
This was, I think, the NBA at the height of its
popularity. And you see it because, you know, the first scene, Kadeem Harrison is wearing a Michael Jordan jersey.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, be like Mike.
Yeah, Mike transcended
everything.
Sports in general.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, this is coming off the heels of Bird and Magic.
Yeah.
Before that, you know, Wilt Chamberlain, all the other guys.
Sure. And they all get referenced in it. You know what I mean? Bernard King gets referenced
Bernard
in
King
it.
Bernard King played for the Bulls. Bullets.
And Magic playing for L.A.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then Michael Jordan kind of came up and changed, brought the game to a global audience.
Global level, basically. Yeah.
I mean, like a marketing behemoth.
No question. No question. I mean, yeah, in the first scene, you know, when they're playing out there, right. He goes, Michael Jordan came down here, and he said, Sidney Dean, you need to come to the league. I said, no. I don't want too good.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
I got to keep playing for $62. I got to keep playing to send Kadeem Hardison to Sizzler.
Yeah, so 92, the Dream Team, being the height of NBA or basketball, everything.
Yep.
Dream Team came out that year, summer. That was the first year, by the way, the Summer and Winter Olympics were in the same year.
Yep.
Who else? Space Jam was not far behind.
That was actually the first year Michael Jordan won his first championship.
Right, 92.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yep. And Spike Lee's starting to blow up, too.
Oh, yeah.
So you have this intersection, this moment bubbling up right before the riots where basketball is becoming a global phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Black, sort of like a new crop of black voices is being commercialized,
mm-hmm.
you know, with basketball and like with endorsement deals and sneakers.
Definitely.
And so this film kind of fits into all of that.
Yep. Shifting to a very urban culture.
Right. And we're getting, it's right before, like the soundtrack is mostly African American, but it's not quite all hip hop yet. Like if this movie had come out 3 years later, it'd be much more, hip hop would have been much more mainstream.
No question.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's still like James Brown songs.
There's a bit of jazz, there's a bit of funk in it. Yeah.
Jimi Hendrix. It's all Barbershop, the things that get sampled by hip hop.
Yeah.
The amino acids are there. The building blocks.
I mean, this was right before hip hop actually just exploded.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And okay, well, we've got Miss Rosie Perez in this as well as Gloria.
I mean, she's one of my first crushes in this.
Dude, formative. That's she. What an alcoholic introvert and who loves trivia.
I didn't even.
That's
think
what
about
I want
it.
Now.
I mean, come on.
Right.
That's what I.
And at a younger age, I didn't recognize how much Stoli she was drinking.
Yes.
Every scene she's drinking Stoli.
Sure. Seeing this film as a kid, I didn't notice any of that.
I just thought
that she was a wise, smart, protective girlfriend.
Yeah.
Super cute.
And now I'm watching it and I was like, what? Has that alcohol, has that vodka bottle just appeared for the first time?
Yeah, you didn't. I didn't even remember that she was a drinker.
It's in every scene. There's a Stoli bottle in every, like with her.
Wine.
Yep. Every scene. And now I'm realizing, okay, she's like this because she's drinking, like, but she's also a fiery Puerto Rican girl, you know what I mean, from the Bronx.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Is she unintelligibly, incomprehensibly wise, or is she just a moody alcoholic?
Yeah. Maniac.
Her brain acts as a sponge.
Exactly. Exactly. Foods that start with the letter Q.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Quince, baby. And, but so Rosie Perez, man, I wish that she was in more movies than she is, but this is her at the height of her powers as well.
Mm-hmm.
Such a funny comedic actress. She's got some of the best lines in this movie.
She does.
Great dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
She's looking good.
Mm-hmm.
And she was such a cultural icon for all of us urban youth.
She has some quotes that'll last a lifetime in there.
She was the head lead choreographer for the Fly Girls.
What's she?
Living Color for years.
That's right. That telling J-Lo what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Ropesy.
That's right.
Was Do the Right Thing before this or after this?
Do the Right Thing was before.
Before this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was like her breakout.
Oh, I forgot about that, yeah.
Yeah.
That was like a breakout.
She's originally from Brooklyn, although you would think the Bronx.
The Bronx makes
but
sense.
But she's a Brooklyn.
That makes sense, yeah.
She's Bushwick from when Bushwick was real.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's crazy.
Bushwick she's was
from
wild.
She's from Ducktown Bushwick.
Yes.
Black Moon Bushwick.
Yeah.
I love it.
You know, and you look at old photos of her just hanging out and being part of that formative hip-hop scene as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I think that world, the world of being like a black or brown celebrity was much smaller then.
Mm-hmm.
So you see photos and it's like her hanging out with Mike Tyson.
Everybody together, right?
And Spike Lee.
Very true.
And Magic Johnson just like waving out of the corner.
Yeah.
And Arsenio Hall's in the back.
Of course Arsenio's there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being like, why am I not in the front of this picture?
It's got a hit show.
Yes. So we've got Rosie, Kadeem Hardison, who was mm-hmm. big in the 90s as Dwayne Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the coolest guys from that era.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened to him.
mean, yeah. He had a pretty... 89 and 92.
Did he get into the drugs? He might have got into...
No.
No?
Just, you know.
He did, but for whatever reason, he did not... he wasn't part of the In Living Color, you know, sketch team.
Yeah.
He didn't break out and put out a stand-up special. Just under that
radar.
Yeah, something happened. He graduated from Hillman and then just probably just got like a desk job.
It seems so, doesn't it?
I guess.
It seems so. He's picking up the phone now.
He was just too thirsty, like drunk texting Jasmine Guy.
Yeah.
Instead of, well, this is pre-text, but just obsessing over just his castmates. Just writing
letters. Yeah.
Instead of focusing on his own career.
Those flip glasses, man.
Flip glasses.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of pigeonholing when it comes to, or typecasting when it comes to what people wore back then, like Blossom, Kadeem. Like, they were literally what they wore. So after that character, you can't, like, where's your dumb hat?
Yeah.
Where's those glasses?
Where's the glasses?
No career.
I'd like to go out for this role as a scientist. They're like, but no, scientists don't wear that hat or those glasses.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you can't do that.
As soon as he takes them off, that's it.
It's over.
Yeah.
Career toast. he was actually in a vampire in Brooklyn, or was that what Eddie Murphy movie was?
Hell
that?
Yeah, it was.
He was in that one.
Sure.
Right? There you go.
You know what?
Never saw it.
This is a side note from the Candyman podcast we did last time, but we brought up Eddie Murphy, and he auditioned to be Candyman, but he didn't take it. So they gave it to Tony Todd, and Eddie Murphy went on to do Vampire in Brooklyn.
Why do I can't believe that he would have to audition for that? And
can you imagine Candyman being like,
I'm a donkey. I can't even picture that. Is that true?
Yeah.
I don't know. I honestly don't believe that.
Not tall enough. Not big enough.
No, he's also Eddie Murphy. It's like, dude, think about way to ruin a horror movie.
He's like, I'm covered in bees. Yeah. Okay. Wow, isn't that crazy?
Eddie,
isn't that
crazy? You're covered in bees, Eddie.
Eddie.
I can't.
I'm covered in bees.
I don't want to doubt you or Zilla.
You want some?
That's crazy. That's crazy. Was he auditioning? What year did that Candyman came out? 92?
Yeah, something like that.
Man, I saw that movie Drunk on Private Stock. That's cool. Basement.
Drunk on Private Stock.
Dude, the life of a street hustler playing basketball. Can you believe the amount of money these people are playing for? It's like pre-inflation.
Yeah.
$62?
It reminds me of like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels money. It's like you're killing people over just such a small amount of money, dude.
Yeah, $1,000.
Go to a trade school.
Pulling it out of his shoe.
Yeah. And his fucking balls.
His balls, his hat.
He pulls it out of the balls like, yeah, you can keep that $400.
Yeah. We need to make $7,000 to play the Stooky Brothers back.
The Stooky
pay the
Brothers.
Stooky Brothers $7,000. These two fucking idiots in trench coats travel all the way from Louisiana to
LA. In the dirtiest van ever.
For $7,000.
Yeah.
I love that whole little subplot, by the way. The
Stooky Brothers.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Yeah.
See these pictures?
This is what's going to happen to you, Billy.
There's so many great things in this movie, so we can break it down.
Yeah, well, let's do a very quick bio for anybody that hasn't seen the film, mm-hmm. right? We got a young man on the run from the Stooky Brothers who, with his girlfriend in tow, the guy is Billy Hoyle, and he is the new guy in L.A. who wants to make some money on the underground hustling street basketball scene.
The real.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, we see the first scene is we see him showing up at dawn in Venice Beach where there's an acapella doo-wop band.
Yep.
Group singing.
Which,
and that just feels like it's straight out of Down and Out in Beverly Hills.
Oh, yeah.
What a cliche that there's always, whenever you go to Venice Beach, there's going to be a group of black men singing songs.
Yeah. with fantastic pipes.
Yeah. And
he drops him a dollar.
Yeah, he does. Mm-hmm. Generous. Well, by 1992 pre-inflation standards.
Mm-hmm.
And so he hustles Sidney Dean.
Yeah.
Who is the king of the court there.
Yep.
And, you know, what? So throughout the course of the film, Billy Hoyle has to make $7,000 hustling to pay back the Stooky Brothers.
Right.
And Sidney Dean has to make money to buy a house for his wife and babies.
Mm-hmm. A more noble cause.
Yep,
sure.
Definitely.
And Rosie... playing Gloria, her dream is to be on Jeopardy, mm-hmm. and she spends every day drinking a bottle of vodka mm-hmm. in whatever motel she's in, memorizing trivia for the day that Jeopardy calls. Because you know what? Chance favors the prepared.
That's right.
You got to keep your sword sharp.
Preparation meets opportunity.
Yes. and that's as far as I got with the synopsis of the film.
I think that was it.
It's like a hip hop basketball grifters.
Yep.
Yes.
Grifters. Sorry.
With a whole lot of your mama jokes and swindling. It's great.
Yep.
Yeah. And there's no honor among thieves. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I learned from this film.
Correct.
You know, con artists will con each other.
Exactly.
And you've got to keep eyes in the back of your head the whole time.
You even think there's a code.
Yeah.
But
it's rife with hypocrisy. This whole situation. I mean, one of my favorite lines in the film, probably my favorite line, is Woody Harrelson says, "I don't hustle with people who are dishonest." When he gets scammed, you know, so it's just basically like, you know, playing with fire, then getting burned and getting angry about it. But
Well, Billy Hoyle is that character. He's a traditional basketball player, trad, lover of the game. He's got fundamentals.
Yeah, fundamentals.
He's a heads up ball player.
That's right.
He's a white athlete.
Exactly. Yeah.
But he's got a 3-pointer.
He's got a jump shot.
He's
Stockton. Yeah. Pick and roll.
He's got layups.
He's got that Indiana basketball. Hoosiers throw a chair across the fucking court.
Punch a
bounce pass. Just stare right at the guy on your bounce pass. Telegraph every pass. But make
perfect
sure
chest pass.
Square.
Maybe a no-look pass here and there just be flashy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the school of basketball that he's coming from.
You know,
and he's not about looking good. No. He's about being underestimated.
It's that pre-integration era ball.
One of my favorite scenes goes, "I play better guys than him in Brooklyn and Jersey."
Yeah,
and I'm from Jersey, so hearing that, I'm like, "Yeah, right. He has played better guys in Brooklyn and Jersey. That's right."
Yeah,
street ball.
That's right.
So, I mean, I guess this is pre-internet, so you have more time to burn people by playing the hustle like this. Mm-hmm. But I guess he's already burned up all the goodwill he had in New Jersey and New York.
Every bridge,
you know, hustling there.
Now, how can you hustle? Like, you know, you'll see those dudes just took money. Yo, I'm on this dude's Instagram feed. This picture of those two dudes is from 4 days ago.
Yeah. Have you seen his handle? It's Venice Beach Hustler.
I just geotagged him. He's 3 blocks away.
Geotagged.
He's taking pictures at the friendlies.
He's got the money out on the table.
Yeah, there's no... you can't disappear anymore.
Nope. Mm-mm.
Yeah, so he's a great player who happens to have a terrible temper. He's got these personal flaws.
Yep.
Jealousy, anger, and a compulsive gambling addiction.
Which is probably the worst one. That's the one that causes the rest of the problems.
No question.
Yeah.
Most apparent.
Right. Mm-hmm. He's willing to risk it all.
All of it.
Over dumb shit.
I always kind of make fun of gambling addictions, and I don't know if this is a hot take for me, or this is bad, or a touchy subject, but that really...
Yeah.
I mean, it's just bizarre to me. It's like, that's your fucking...
But, like, all of it.
Hey, just stop.
All of it?
If you watch him, I guess it's like, I never believed that there could exist, like, pathological liars exist. And then you actually meet one.
Yeah, okay.
And you're like, oh, shit. Mm-hmm. Like, you really can't, help yourself, can you?
It's actually a problem.
Yeah.
What's wrong with his brain? What's wrong with the wiring?
Right, exactly.
Where he's like, it's this need to be in control or to be right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Against all odds.
A ton of ego. And so at least this makes more sense because he's actually betting on his own physical ability.
His ability.
As opposed to like gamblers who are betting on cards.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I mean, I don't even know if it's the high of the win for him specifically the way it is for, you know, people that gamble tons of money. But it's definitely, you know, you just can't say no.
Yeah.
And that's backed up by ego. But
ego, 100%.
He is a hopeless gambler.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah. And the reason that he's in trouble with the Stuckey brothers... Mm-hmm. Is he did save Gloria. Gloria bought a car, but it didn't work, and she wanted to not pay for it. And the Stuckey brothers said that she owes them $7,000, maybe $8,000.
Mm-hmm.
But then Billy decides that he's gonna be the hero, the Captain Save-A-Ho, the White Knight.
Yeah.
He's going to come in there, and he's going to throw a basketball game so they can recoup their money via gambling.
Yep.
And then in the heat of the moment... Like halfway through, he refuses to throw the game because somebody called him a chump
and said he couldn't score.
Yeah, and he's like, I got to prove you wrong.
Yeah.
Which is very much, this happened in like Snatch as, yeah. as well, you know, and what a dummy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like he doesn't understand the math. He doesn't understand that it's all about money. Mm-hmm. He's letting his feelings get in the way.
He'd rather win a 10-point game than
right.
owe somebody 7,000.
Yeah. He's like, I'm going to win, yeah. but I'm going to lose by winning.
Yep.
You know, and
sometimes you tie.
Exactly. Is that technically addition by subtraction or the other way around, which is another term that's like, yeah, okay.
It's you just know, a globule.
You guys know the term of, it's a Pyrrhic victory. Have yes. you heard that before? Mm-hmm. So Pyrrhic victory, I think it happened in ancient Greece, and it was this guy won the battle, but he lost so many men that it didn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So... You know, sometimes like they trick you into thinking you won, mm. but you waste too much.
Yeah,
like wars goodwill. Of attrition.
Yeah,
exactly. Everyone just loses everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. So that's what happened to our boy Billy, and now he's in L.A. and he meets up with Sydney. Sydney's like this. He is the polar opposite, mm. right? Mm-hmm. It's a flashy, mm. the flashiest trash talking con artist you've ever seen. It's all
goddamn work being this good.
Yeah, rocking two. What? How many layers definitely is he
two,
wearing?
Those two tank tops.
Two tanks.
Yeah. Three yeah. pairs of socks, which I only thought was for selling crack in the winter.
I used to wear three pairs of socks when I played basketball really? As well. Yeah.
Why is that?
It's like you want your shoes to be as tight as possible, mm. and it kind of helps with ankle support as well a bit. Even though they're just socks, just having layers up on your ankles and just tying those up really tight feels good on your feet.
Do you lose circulation if it's too tight?
No, I try to get it as tight as possible. Just because, like, your ankle, like, you know, how many cuts you're doing on the basketball court, those ankles go. My ankles are shot to this day because of how many times I've rolled them.
Sure.
Tightening them up as possible.
Do you watch YouTube videos on sort of restorative practices for ankles?
I haven't. No.
Like yeah. You probably will now.
Not at all.
I rolled my ankle.
I rolled it coming out the movie theater the other day. It's like walking out after seeing a joke and just rolled my ankle, fell down.
It's yeah, like
these ankles are 82 years old.
Super fun. I roll them all the time. I'm walking out of Peter Pan's Donuts. Yeah. I shouldn't try to bite a donut and walk at the same time. I roll an ankle.
So Buck's got Oscar Robertson's actual ankles. Full court basketball is still the most singular most tiring sport I've ever played. If you run full court basketball, no matter what kind of shape you're in.
I
haven't played
full court in so long, I can't do it anymore.
The last time I did, I sprained my ankle, and I'll never do it again.
Sure.
Those days are gone for mm-hmm. me. I can shoot around,
sure,
but I can't run.
Maybe a little 21.
Yeah, sure.
Can you shoot with both hands?
Are you ambidextrous?
I'm better around the rim with two hands, but I can't take a jump shot with my left hand. Mm. But I can finish around the basket with my left hand. I'm predominantly right-handed.
Okay.
I can't go. I have zero left-handed dribble. Mm. Never did.
Yeah, how's your fadeaway jump shot?
Fantastic.
Great. That's yeah. important.
Yeah.
That's the most important.
Well, I was top 10 in New Jersey in my...
What?
Yeah.
Yes.
I was a good basketball player.
We're learning new things.
This is great.
So what happened to the career?
There was a couple schools that actually wanted me to go to college, but they were like D3. There might have been one D2, but there were smaller schools. And for some reason, I lost the passion in my last year of high school and wanted to go party. So I went to West Virginia University instead of going to play basketball at a smaller school.
Yeah.
And ended up just drinking from kegs four nights out of the week.
My good friend went to that school and, wow, I went to visit him once.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I left after a year because it was just too much.
Yeah, that's like, but it was like the number one party school.
It was the number one party school when I was there.
Because there's nothing to do besides go to people's houses and get
drunk. Just clubs, party houses. It was a lot. And I played my best basketball there, though. Mm. Like, I was done with my high school career. Didn't play college ball, but I played with that team, my West Virginia basketball team, who was number 4 in the country that year. And I played with them, and I was the best I ever was. I started dunking. I never dunked in high school. I started dunking in my first year of college. I was incredible, but I just started partying. And
so if just going to throw this out there, if mm-hmm. the music career doesn't go
sure.
accordingly,
mm-hmm.
are you thinking about possibly moving to Venice Beach, pairing up with... Woody Harrelson or Wesley Snipes?
I had the I have to run the Bronx, Brooklyn, and Jersey first.
Shit, you're gonna go to Rutgers,
and then I'm gonna go head over to Venice. Yeah, yeah. The Rucker. I gotta head to the Rucker.
what I love about this is a sports movie. To kind of go into it, like to you know, tag onto that is that this is not a movie about sports guys that make it.
No, oh, yeah, nah.
This is. About two dudes on the downturn
yeah.
who peaked already,
yeah.
and it's it's kind of, it's a wrap. And I like movies about people that do things kind of for the love rather than for the the championship.
Great point.
You know, these, and, you know, I think about this with like comedy too. And like, you know, these, this is a metaphor for just, you know, being into something, but there's a timeline. There's like finite timeline, you know, like Woody has no, or Billy rather has no other skills. So it's like kind of really depressing.
It is. It's like, a sad, sadder movie than you would think.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, yeah, yeah.
They just can't get right, either one of them. I mean, although Wesley Snipes' path is far more...
Well, Sidney has a family. Right. You know, when he has to leave the court, exactly, he can be a contractor for that hires illegal labor. Yeah.
Speaking of Spanish.
Like, that's right.
To
selling tiles outside of the taco shop.
Yeah, reshingle like white yuppies' houses.
That guy makes me. He made my skin crawl.
Yeah, going around the city's ordinances.
Yeah.
So you know,
he's
still
the definition of a hustler because he's hustling in every aspect of his life.
Exactly.
Like, and not just on the basketball court, but he's literally, you know,
while driving a Camaro.
While driving. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's what he's doing. Like, his goal is to provide for his family and his wife, who is supportive and sweet, and probably had, in my opinion, the best acting scene
when she's robbed.
After the robbery. Yeah, it's between her and Rosie Perez for me.
Mm. That scene was fantastic.
She's incredible. Mm. A lot of shades of Marissa Tomei in My Cousin Vinny.
Mm.
That sort of powerful, slick talking New York.
Tyra Farrell.
Lady. Tyra Farrell is the actress.
Is the actress? Name, yes. Yeah.
She was great.
So you ain't getting your money back. Oh, listen, honey. I'm going to get my money back.
Need to listen to the woman.
Yes. Well, the women are wise in this. You know, Gloria gets a lot more stage time.
Mm.
A lot more time on screen.
Mm-hmm.
But both the ladies are wise in pushing their men to excellence.
Mm-hmm.
And I like one thing, things about Gloria that I loved when I saw it as a kid and still love now, is that she pulled a gun out on Sidney to protect Billy.
Yeah.
And
it's a real one right there.
That's right. That's the type of lady you want, you know, just rocking a tank top, kind of thick.
No bra.
Half a bottle of wine deep.
Yep.
Pulling out a revolver.
Yep.
On a threat to your man.
Someone you don't want with a gun in their hand.
That's right.
Yeah.
And she's very street smart. You know, she's the one who saw through the deception when Sidney hustled Billy in Watts.
And then got that money back.
Yes, she did.
Which was great. Great scene.
Which forced them to form an unlikely partnership and play in the tournament.
That leads to my favorite scene. The tournament is my favorite scene.
The corporate brotherhood tournament.
Oh,
that's right.
Yeah, and they're like, don't worry, these corporations will save us and create racial harmony.
Yeah, that's true. I like when there's like, the guy, one of the refs goes, black balls. What'd you say? I was referring to the jerseys. I just like how they had to do that.
Not your skin, play ball.
Oh, and you, yeah.
It was not the glove of your skin, play ball.
And you can watch this movie just for, even if you don't like sports, you can watch it just for the verbal banter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, during that corporate brotherhood tournament, Woody Harrelson's dialogue just is goes so off. Crisp.
He doesn't stop.
Yeah, just bricks. Talking about bricks and collecting all the bricks and building a house out of the bricks.
Build a shelter for your mother and your sister.
Yeah.
Yep. I want them out of my house immediately.
That was so good.
Woo!
That's fantastic.
Reebok pumps and your mama jokes.
Yeah.
That's basically...
That Z in your head. What are you, the Black Zorro?
That's 1992 in a nutshell right there, honestly.
Those two were actually NBA players.
One of them I recognize, the shorter one.
The shorter one, that's Dwayne Williams, or Dwayne something.
He was married to Tisha from Martin.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and he actually was undrafted to the Knicks in 89.
That's right. Also an Above the Rim, I think.
He's an Above the Rim as well, yeah. And now he's in Real Husbands of Hollywood with Kevin Hart.
Oh, yeah.
He's an actor now, yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kadeem Hardison had a cameo on that on a Real Housewives.
I believe that.
Did he really?
Yeah. I believe
so. Is that like a spoof, like a satirical spoof?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
It's actually kind of funny, but it's a little annoying at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one of the funniest scenes for me was Raymond when they're playing.
Oh yeah.
This is early on when Billy and Sydney team up.
I think this is the first game they team up together.
Yeah, so they team up and they are they go against Raymond, who is also a pro basketball mm-hmm. player in real life,
mm-hmm.
and Raymond doesn't have enough money to bet with them. So then he pulls a hilarious, almost like, don't be drinking your juice in the hood.
Like a Keystone Cops robbery.
Yeah, where he's like, I'll be right back. And he goes to his car, and you don't know exactly what he's going to do. So the way it's filmed is just funny because it reveals just enough information at each point to make it, to heighten it. So he's like, goes to his car, and he pulls out like a little bag out of his glove box. And then out of the glove compartment in the bag, then he pulls out a gun. And he puts on a mask, and he goes to rob a liquor store. But he's still wearing all of his Raymond basketball clothes. And he's still Raymond-sized and still moving like Raymond. A block away from where he was playing basketball, he tries to rob the owner of the store, who immediately recognizes him and doesn't bat an eyelash. And then Raymond proceeds to take the mask off so that there's no reasonable doubt. And then the owner is able to negotiate and buy Raymond's gun from him.
I mean, literally swindle him.
Swindle.
Like, no, I'll give you $250.
What? Yeah, so we're, you know, this really paints the picture of Raymond as a complete idiot.
Yeah. So, all right, but now you robbing me.
Yeah. And then he tries to, after he loses the game, he goes after him with a box cutter.
It gets like played out.
And then he goes, I'm going to go to my car in my glove compartment and get my other gun. And he goes, and I'm going to come back and shoot everybody.
Which is what you have to say.
Yeah.
I mean, I got it. I was like, yep.
It's like a Bond villain just laying out his whole plan for James Bond while he's trapped in a cage.
Yeah. Apparently, the writer was playing basketball in a pickup game, and somebody actually did that. And that's where he got that scene from.
Someone said that?
Yeah. He was like, I'm going to go get my gun and shoot everybody here. And he wrote that scene, and it's just hilarious.
Basketball gun violence are not far. You know, there's that.
Hand in hand, in streets. Yeah.
At the same time, like Billy and Sydney... Wesley and Woody, their comedic chops and timing is so good in this scene. This plays like a Marx Brothers scene where they keep acting like, I don't know you. He's well, like, I do know you. Do you know me? And Sydney's able to get on the other side of Raymond.
Yeah.
And like get on his side. That is straight up Looney Tunes.
So good.
I thought that
He's talking
great,
about though. Your wife and kids.
wait. He goes back over behind them. I love that.
I'm like, cut his ass.
And then they hop in the car with Gloria. And this to me is like, this is my favorite part of the film because it's the part where there's like harmony.
Yeah.
Like they've all won.
Yep.
They all have a victory and they all work together for that victory.
Right.
And it's like the perfect trinity of characters.
Yeah.
Like I want to watch an animated series with like Sydney, Gloria, and Billy together.
Yes.
Just having fun,
yes.
doing cool things in this like early 90s yeah. version of LA.
Uh-huh.
And of course, it all falls apart after that.
I love how short-lived that harmony was.
It was brief. It was just the car ride.
That's, great. You know?
Yeah.
For like a small fraction of time.
Listening to Jimmy.
Sure. Yeah. And
you ain't hearing him.
Race and gender, like, pull them apart. They're all, like, they're like, the plan came together. And then, you know, then they exactly start fighting over Jimmy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Such Hendrix. A microcosm of race relations in America. It's like, we want to get together. We should. There's absolutely no reason nobody does. But it's like,
yeah,
you know, tribal.
And then, like, jealousy over Gloria, too.
I love it.
Like,
don't talk about my lady. I found your weak spot, son. You just exposed your belly.
Exactly. And that's why you never, ever, ever look shook. When people talk about something that you really care
that's
about.
That's right.
You just repress all of it.
I know you. You'd rather look good than play good.
Yeah.
How much? What do you say? He takes his chain. He says, "How much that chain set your family back?
How many meals?
How many meals?
Yeah, so good. So racist.
They're pushing it. I love it.
Yeah. You're like every other brother I know. You'd rather look good and lose.
Yeah.
Look pretty and win.
Yes.
Or look bad and win.
Yep.
Well,
and now everybody who goes thrift shopping at Beacon's Closet dresses like Billy. And
Mac DeMarco looking North Brooklynites.
Yeah,
Mac DeMarco.
at that time, he looked like a chump, I guess. But now he's like that. That's the height of white fashion.
I mean, I still think chump. I'm a 90s kid. He looks like a chump still.
Give him the chump, man. Give him the chump.
There's so many scenes that just resonate. There's so many lines that I remember, like buzzwords. You want to talk about this, the Stuckey brothers real quick?
The Stuckey brothers?
Hell yeah.
So basically low-level Italian mafia hitman from Louisiana, whose whole shtick is, like, they want their money back. You know, they strip Willie down after they figure out they can't get the money from him, put a gun down his pants.
Down
his pants, which is a great place to put a gun.
Shotgun.
Before that, they show him pictures of what they do to people. So it's like, oh, what you think are bodies. And it turns out that they're just elaborate photo shoots so they could keep face. So they're just like, you know, hitmen with a heart of gold. Like, we don't actually want to kill you, but we want to make it look like we're going to kill you. And we're going to take pictures of you.
And just the dirtiest brown van that you wouldn't think any Italian dudes from Louisiana would roll up in.
Yes.
And why are you wearing trench coats in L.A., man?
Exactly.
It's hot out there, dude. That's why people in L.A. get shot wearing flannels.
Guns with the silencers on them, too, like a bit extra.
Like, you know what I mean?
It's too good.
Yeah, it's
no hard feelings, obviously.
There's something for everybody in this movie.
There really is.
A couple mobsters in there.
Yeah.
And I love that they're actually not good at killing people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the best.
Yeah.
But also, don't roll around in a car with Polaroids of potential murderers.
People dead, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But in L.A., you could probably get away with it. No, it's just photo shoots.
Especially
it's casting. It's a casting job. You could get away with it. I love that there's no real winner in this film. I mean, nobody really, really wins. But that's why it's brilliant, yeah. Right?
Especially because her dialogue saying that earlier in the film is that sometimes because he doesn't, there is no winner.
I think ultimately she kind of won the most, Gloria's character.
But she also lost.
She did. She lost.
She lost him, but she also won.
She lost her man, but she self-actualized.
Definitely.
Know?
Mm-hmm.
Because I wonder, part of the alcoholism, at least for me, is that it's. She's killing time, waiting to do the thing that she was put on Earth to do, which was to win Jeopardy.
It does seem like she blossomed after she gets on the show.
Now she's got now she's moving forward in life. Before, she was stagnant. She was just in this hotel room or motel, like, not doing anything.
Mm. That'll lead you to drinking if you have to sit there and just memorize facts.
Mm. Yeah. And in fact, you know, when we see her, every time we see her before that, she's kind of like, she's indoors most of the time. And now we see her and she's out rollerblading.
Mm-hmm. She was a house cat for a little while.
Yeah.
Spread those wings.
Mm-hmm. And she, you know, she saw Billy for who, like, he couldn't stop. You know what I mean? She kind of ridded that weight of him, kind of. And that is her winning, honestly.
Yeah, and she wanted to have a future for him.
Mm-hmm.
She was ready to, instead of, you know, she gave him that money, which is it's enabling.
Of course.
It's a test.
But she was 100%. She did that on purpose.
Yeah. He was like, I might do something stupid with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What's crazy to me, we didn't get into this scene yet, but where he goes to Sydney and he asks him, can you help me out? I need to get Gloria on Jeopardy. And they go down to the security guard's basketball court. And he goes, all right, yeah, I'll do this for you, but you need to shoot. You need to shoot for it. And he goes, all right, I'm ready to shoot. He says, not at Ghana. You're shooting for the Sudan.
Yeah.
And he goes, and it's got to be a hook shot.
The hook shot. Yeah.
Makes it in. But then, and the next scene cuts immediately to Jeopardy.
Yeah.
But he never tells her that he did that for her.
That's right.
I think so.
All of that stuff was assumed because it did cut to that. Also, complete suspension of disbelief that a security guard from the lot
can get her on the show.
On the show the next night. Yeah. That'll never happen. Jeopardy.
All that made sense to me as a kid. And now, and it even makes sense to me in my suspension of disbelief. I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
However, I was thinking about the script writing process.
Yeah.
And putting this out there and workshopping it with people and having people read it, they 100% people would say, what are you kidding me? Like, this is the most illogical bullshit I've ever seen typed out. You need to justify that.
Yeah.
And I would have lost heart. I probably would have lost heart as the script writer of this. And been like, I don't know. Okay. You're right. And just like,
it was Shelton. He wrote and directed it again.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, I agree with Gabe, but the suspension, like, I was like, yeah, sure. That happened. Just go to Jeopardy. Like, who cares? Like, you know that he wrote a scene where he tells her, and they probably filmed it.
Yeah.
And they were like, what the fuck is the point of this?
100%.
They probably cut it.
Yeah. You know, I just thought about it because I saw it for the 100th time. You know what I mean? Like, sure. Now, you know, but the other few times, I'm like, yeah, okay.
Well, that's what you know, that's the thing about critically analyzing a film is that, you know, it was all, it's all a magic lie that's been put together. Mm-hmm. And like, the more times you see it, the more you actually see where it's being held together with duct tape and, like, bubble gum.
Yeah.
And that, this is a moment in the film storyline where it's like, what the fuck? Like, really? Yes.
This is why the Non-Cerebral Film Review Podcast is the way to review movies and listen to movie reviews. I'm not going to attack this from, like, a analytical manner.
This is the best way to go about
it. But with that huge lapse. No,
well, because I'm yelling at it. I'm yelling at the screen, though, because I'm like, man, Billy, tell Gloria on screen that you did this for her so that she knows. Because she's still angry with him when he comes to the dressing room. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's absurd that she should be angry if she knows that he's the reason she's on Jeopardy.
$14,000. You know what? You're right. See, I didn't even put two and two together there. She may not have known.
Mm. Yeah.
That's true.
And it's fine. I mean, it's fine if the way that it's filmed is fine. I'm just screaming at Billy for not having told her as a character.
It does make a more adorable line where kind of breaks his way into the her dressing room and then just starts playing music for her.
Yeah.
Right? You wouldn't have that if he told her.
If he had to explain.
So he wanted that scene.
Sure.
You need that I fell in love with you, not just because you did something nice to me, but a grand romantic gesture worked better for the script.
Definitely.
By the way, this is one of Stanley Kubrick's favorite movies.
It was. I read that.
Because Stanley Kubrick understands good cinema.
And he understands that life is fucking messy. You know what I mean? Nothing's wrapped up in a bow at the end. These guys' lives are still fucked up.
Yep.
They won $3,000.
Yep.
Dude, like, that shit is not...
This movie not fuck you is, money. Is still has some kernels that I think are probably true in relationships and just navigating a relationship with my lady. Like, I'm like, okay, that Gloria and Billy in bed... Yeah. When she's like, I'm thirsty, and then he immediately goes to fix it.
Yes.
I'm like, yeah, dude, that's like how I'm hardwired to go. If you tell me you're annoyed or something's wrong.
How can I fix it?
I'm immediately in the how can I fix it mode.
Yeah, that's.
Which is, but the feminist argument against that is sort of like, it is for this autonomy. It's like, I see it as rude not to help anyone who seems to be in despair.
Yeah.
That's.
But the reality is you're just supposed to, you know, a woman just wants you to be like, hey, man, empathize.
I don't know if I buy that, man.
I, too, understand dry-mouthedness.
Yeah, I understand dry-mouthedness. But it's like, oh, you're thirsty? It's water.
Yeah.
Right? That's what that means.
Yeah.
When I'm thirsty, usually I'm like, in my head, I should probably get water. Or I would love it if someone just understood my thirstiness.
Right. Well, you probably wouldn't even say you're thirsty. You would just
I'd probably just walk quietly. Never mention it because I'm thirsty a lot during the day. Right. And I don't need to audibly express myself.
Yeah. It's not information that the community needs to
nobody
be aware
else,
of.
Besides me and that water, need to get in on this kind of action. You know what I mean? You too understand what it's like to be thirsty?
Does anybody else here sympathize with me right now?
Congratulations to the fucking human race. I thought that was like, I understand, like, so obviously it's a metaphor for, or, you know, understanding and listening.
Well, this ties in. It does tie in
to
Sydney at the end. Uh-huh. So Sydney at the end, he says, "Oh my, I need somebody to help me play basketball,
right?
And because I'm gonna like we just got robbed, and I need to make my money back." Yeah. And Woody or Billy is like, "I'll help you." Whereas if he had taken the the advice of Gloria's I'm thirsty, he would have been like, I too know what it is like to be in debt and need a partner to help.
I sympathize with you.
But again, that's not what I can do right now because I've got my 100%. Own shit to worry about, which is Gloria.
Right on the head.
Yep.
You know, and right so that, and this is like the, you know, watching it for the 100th time where I'm finally making that connection. I'm like, oh, this is the Gloria wisdom.
Yep.
Right.
That where it really could have played out. In his life.
Yeah.
To play the king and the duck was a big thing for him. All ego, all everything. That's what he had to do. He had to do it.
Great scene.
And she gives him every sort of passive nugget.
Yeah.
You know, you take what you will. And it ties up perfectly into the sense that, like, Sidney knew what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that he was going to take the bet regardless. And he goes, I presented you with an option And you took that option. And yep. It didn't take much to get you there.
Yep.
He's like, next. He's like, you have to listen to the woman, but you listen to me.
Yes.
So he knew what he was doing. But that's why I love it, because it's a continuous hustle, even with good intentions, even though the fact now they actually really care about each other as people.
Yeah.
It's still a fucking hustle.
Yep.
Because, I knew what I was doing. I gave you the option. You took it, and it was easy to get you to that point.
Because your feelings don't matter. Hustle.
She's never coming back.
Yep.
He's like, listen to the woman. That's a start. He's like, so I listened, and then he's like, no, no.
Nope.
Just listen. That's a start.
Sydney Dean.
Yeah. I love, you know, and it is a film about friendship, but it's also a film about the lesson is you're responsible for all your own choices.
Yeah, trust yourself too, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's ultimately, no one's going to love you like you love yourself. So that's what this movie should have been called.
100%. It was supposed to be called something else.
White Men Can't Dunk or something.
White Men Can't Score.
White Men Can't Score.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, which is a terrible title.
And he said the reason he didn't do that is because overseas people would say white man can't get it in.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and he's like, that can't be good. That can't be good.
No, right. Score or get it in. Yeah. Those both just sound like bad pickup artists.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, was it Swingers? Sure. Like, I don't...
Yeah. I wanted to get back to this, but this... I think a reason that Gloria's thirsty monologue it also is... ambiguous is that I'm watching it now through the eyes of an adult who's been around alcoholics and her in bed, she goes from 0 to 100 and like goes, and it sounds crazy because she keeps switching tones so much and gets so angry so quickly. And I'm like, oh, now, like back in the day, I was like, oh, that's just her being quirky. And I'm like, oh, that's just a hungover person with like a dried up brain being emotionally triggered.
Yeah.
And so that's a reason why maybe Billy didn't absorb the wisdom the first time
that's
around.
That's true.
Because watching her now, I'm like, oh, man. Like she's not... That's not cute behavior.
No. Not at all. That's why I love when he pours the water right in her face.
Right. Oh, that's great.
So I'm getting out of here.
Right. I thought, oh, he's a dick. As a kid, I was like, he's a dick. And yeah. I'm like, no, I get it.
He's like, no, I totally get it now.
The evidence there that he was kind of right is she didn't even get that mad.
No.
She was like, yep.
Where are you going?
I get it. And she turns over. Honey, I want a screw.
I want a screw. Oh, fuck.
Oh, fuck.
I want to make love. I wanted to bring, this is one line, we were talking about the Stoogie Brothers earlier, but there's one line I missed about that. It had to be the best line in the movie. Nobody ever really gets it, but I caught it this time. They're coming back after putting the gun down his underwear. They throw him out of the van, and Stoogie Brothers go, Maravich, my ass, I got your pistol right here. That's the good. Best line.
We're going to have to break that one down to Gabe a little bit.
Got
to
break that down. So Pistol Pete Maravich was like one of the first white NBA players with like extreme, like crazy passes and skill and doing things that other black players weren't doing at the time.
Otherworldly ball handling skills. To this day, nobody.
Like, he was like the first, like.
So Pistol Pete Maravich was the guy's name.
Yeah, Pistol Pete Maravich. They called him Pistol. So he throws him out and goes, Maravich, my ass, I got your pistol right here.
Great deep cut reference.
It's fantastic.
Sounds like a rap line.
Mm-hmm. That's why I wrote it.
Go
down.
Over everyone's head.
That's why I wrote it.
Pistol Pete was a New York Harlem cat too.
That's legend. It's such a deep cut. It's like if Dennis Miller was a hip hop MC, that would be one of his references.
Yeah. That's why I picked it up this time. I'm like, that's great.
I kind of just wanted to start watching like those N1 videos again a little bit.
Hot sauce.
Because. Yeah. They came from, like, there's a few cities, I'm sure every major city has it, but there's, like, a DC couple of legendary, DC has Berry Farms,
huge.
Which is, like, the fucking hood, like, the hood. And that's where some of the best players go. Mm-hmm. And that sort of invented the DC crossover, which Allen Iverson perfected at Berry Farms. Mm-hmm. It's when you go deep inside fucked up neighborhoods and play, like, real street ball. Like, Rucker was kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, L.A. with these courts are all,
those basketball courts down in Venice are...
They're huge.
Yeah. I never got a chance to play there, but I wish I did.
They even shouted them out in American History X.
They did, yeah. They did.
They did.
That's true.
I forgot where I was going with that point, but yeah.
No, you were saying that N1. Yeah.
And just like, it kind of made me want to shoot a basketball again. Basketball is one of those things where I love the game itself so much.
It's
a cool, beautiful sport to watch. I don't really love the NBA as a product. I just don't enjoy it anymore. But the game, it's like, it's one of those little, it's like a hobby to me. Like, you can cultivate your basketball shot. It's like golf for the rest of your life. You can actually just shoot. Me and my buddy were, like, in our early 20s, and we played these two guys. One of them was a Washington Post reporter. The other was a doctor. They were 63 years old, each of them.
So balling.
Destroyed us.
Yeah.
Destroyed us.
They had those fundamentals down. Just,
yeah, they couldn't.
Because that muscle memory.
They get a little elbow.
Yeah.
Like this. And I'm like.
Little room.
Just floored.
And those guys, the older guys, that's how they played. They yeah. played rough.
These are two old white dudes, too. So they were just, you know, a little fadeaway jumper.
And they wouldn't elbow. Miss. I bet you they wouldn't miss.
No, they wouldn't do. They just destroyed me and my. I mean, again, we were way shorter than they are.
Yeah.
That's the other weird thing about this film that I think was kind of funny.
Those two were short.
Woody and Wesley were short.
They
dudes.
Were. You could tell that Wesley was a small guy.
Yeah, he was
like,
jacked.
In like the wide shots, you could see him amongst like the NBA guys. He's like tiny.
He's very small.
And you see him in Blade, and he's like, you think he's massive.
Stilts.
Yeah.
You get those Sly Stallones.
Yeah.
Right, they hide those stilts under the trench coat.
Yeah. there's angles to shoot to make him look bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, he's like a Spud Webbs.
Yeah.
Yeah, he couldn't really even kill Spud.
Spud
Webb. The old hawk.
That's when the Bullets growing up were like a circus. We had the tallest player in the NBA and the shortest player in the
Manu
NBA.
Bull?
It's like selling circus tickets.
No, I'm watching. I don't know why, but every time I just kept thinking about Spider-Man. Like whenever I watched Wesley Snipes, like, you know, go
do
up.
Do a 360.
And, yeah, I was like, oh, dude, like if he's like the Black Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that was all athletic. Like, yeah. He couldn't really play basketball. Like,
yeah, he got better.
Hit a horrible jump shot. Like, couldn't shoot, but like he was athletic.
Yeah.
Right.
And they would play. They said they played from 9 a.m. to noon, 5 days out of the week for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Just playing ball.
Yeah.
That's why Keanu didn't get the role.
Because, no, Keanu was too busy surfing.
Well, no, he said, and this is something Keanu Reeves, we talked about it before when we reviewed it in Point Break, like he is a method actor when it comes to physicality. Mm-hmm. Like he does everything. Like all the gun training, like he loves that kind of stuff. But he said, you know, Ron Shelton was like, I didn't cast him because... He's not because he's not a hardworking man. He's as hardworking as anybody. But he was like, he just doesn't. He's not a basketball player.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and basketball is a very specific type of movement.
It's there's like a bit ballet. Of finesse that you need to go with it. Yeah. Like, I totally get. Like, I could probably see how Keanu Reeves wasn't a basketball player because you could tell. Like, a lot of football players. When I play basketball with football players, they have this like rugged like.
Yeah.
Kind of charging thing about them.
They don't know how to handle the ball.
Yeah, it's like charge. It's like run. Fluid. Basketball has like this finesse, and you could tell that in White Man Can't Jump. This is just like this.
You need it.
Yeah.
There's a pick. There's a roll. There's get D'ing up.
Ladies and gentlemen, Al Pacino has joined us in the studio. Again?
Yeah. It's not a game about inches.
Yeah. His new basketball film, any given Sunday through Sunday.
Yeah.
It's a game about finding your line.
Any given Sunday through Monday.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I mean, let's see. I mean, does this movie hold up?
Well, we also have to end it with the last pass. The last play of the movie is he sets the pick. Well, we didn't really go over him betting him Sidney if he could dunk or not.
Right.
So compulsive gambling.
But they win the tournament. They have $2,500 each.
Just predatory lending.
Bet somebody he can dunk. Can't do it.
He knows what he's doing.
Can't do it.
Yeah.
He continuously hustles him, even though he likes him. Like
all just the time. Like, he's like, don't. He's like, Billy, don't do it. He's like, I'm going to do it. Loses it. He goes, see you later. Billy buys Gloria the dress. That's the only thing he gets her. Comes home, whatever.
She hates the dress.
You know she hates it. And then like she still pretends to like it.
She's like, Billy.
All he needs is empathy.
Yeah.
Sure, I love this dress.
Burns down the house. She leaves. Boom, boom.
Wow. And I'm thinking Billy's way too honest in that he confessed to her that he lost all his money. That is some dumb shit. Like, don't. Yeah, just sometimes you got to, like, again, bottle it up.
Yeah.
Push it down.
Wrap that shit up, B.
Figure it out tomorrow. Yeah, man, you are fucking dead broke right now. Yeah. Make love to your woman. She likes the dress, allegedly.
Sort of. She's at least pretending to like it.
Yeah.
She's angry at you. She wouldn't pretend to like that.
She doesn't need to know that you don't have the money.
Right. See, I commended him on that move.
No, man. Sometimes when you get laid off, you got to put your work outfit on the next day, leave the house at the same time.
I'll see you in 8 hours, honey. I love you.
Gotta go get it again.
And figure it out.
Just sit in a park with your head between your hands.
Yeah.
Toss some bread at birds.
Yeah, right. No need to share your misery with her. Yeah.
Loses her. It's the last. They're playing Duck and Duke.
Duck and Duke.
Last play. Sets the pick. Sidney Dean throws a backwards pass at the hoop. And Woody Harrelson goes up and he grabs that thing with two hands and he jams it for the first time in the movie. Ah! Screams.
Shot on a 9-foot basket.
You could tell that it's a small hoop.
What a victory.
Let's go to the rim and he jumps and he drops down about this far from the ground.
That's true.
I wanted him to do the Dave Chappelle Prince thing.
Yeah, the backwards, just watch this little thing lower. Yeah.
Game.
I think, so it is a, you know what, you leave feeling good. They've tricked us narratively.
Exactly.
Right.
We're like, oh, Billy dunked. Yeah. I guess that's it.
Yeah.
He's rich and famous now.
Nah, he just made $2,000 and the girl left him.
Yeah.
Back to square one.
And he lost all his money to the Stoogie Brothers after he won that anyway.
Dude. So now he's broke and he needs Sydney.
Yeah.
A con artist to be his one reference.
One reference is one.
He had jobs laying roofing in L.A. in the summertime.
Yeah. Sounds well, like he's going to learn Spanish.
Ever. Yeah. So. Maybe he'll pick it up.
Yeah. He'll pick up a new skill.
Yeah. He's learned the subtle art of Puerto Rican empathy. So he can pick up Mexican roofing slang.
That's right.
Oh, man. Well, what a wonderful film, everybody. Yeah. I'm so happy, Buck, that you came back to join us.
I mean, this was a blast, guys. Thank you.
What do we give this movie, guys?
You want to start?
I mean, I'm going to go 10 out of 10 alley oops.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
Nice. I'm going to give this movie, I'm going to give it 9 pumps on my Reebok pumps out of 10.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was hoping somebody said that.
Yeah. I'm pumped up. I'm ready to dunk. This is a great movie to watch as a kid. It's a great movie to watch as an adult. It's got Wesley Snipes at the height of his powers. Woody Harrelson is charming, hilarious, endearing. Rosie Perez is a goddess.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget how much she informed my my fantasy life during puberty. Mm-hmm. So God bless you, Rosie, for that. This represents just a great era in pop culture. Mm-hmm. It's so fun to go back and look at the outfits and the style and the verbal banner that was coming out in like the early 90s, man. So see White Men Can't Jump even if you don't like basketball.
Yeah. That's exactly right. This is ultimately not a movie about basketball. Like sports is like basically like a subtle, like not a subtle drop, whatever it is, the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Backdrop, there you go. But it's a movie about relationships, interpersonal, and it's a movie, like, a pretty solid anti-gambling ad.
Yeah.
ultimately, also, like, some really good, like, a lesson in product placement.
Yeah.
How to sell your movie.
Yeah.
I give this one, I give it 9 out of 10 Kadeem Hardison.
You know? Whole Kadeem, I love that.
Yeah.
That's a lot of Kadeems.
That's a lot of Kadeems.
That's a whole different world of Kadeems right there.
Well played.
Yeah, you got it. I mean, I saw it as a kid, couldn't grasp conceptually what it was. It was just like, oh, this is kind of fun. They're talking shit to each other playing basketball. That's what I got out of it. This, and I saw a nipple. I saw Rosie's nipple.
Yep, big time.
Loved it. You got me there. Now it's like an actual, like, case study and interracial relationships, gambling addicts.
I couldn't have said it better.
The working man. It's so layered. It's crazy how you
see
this movie is.
As you get older, you see the life of the movie. You know what I mean?
What it's
and
about.
Same thing. When I was younger, it was just all about basketball.
Yeah.
Now I watch it. It's a life movie.
Brilliant.
It's a life movie.
Well, where can everybody find you, Andrew Charles?
Yeah, _ Andrew Charles on Instagram. You could actually go onto Spotify, YouTube, Tidal, Apple Music, look up Andrew Charles. I do have another single coming out in the next couple weeks. I'm going to put out something for free next week for my birthday. My birthday is Halloween. It's on Thursday. So I'm going to put out something for free just for the listeners. And we're going to keep this thing rolling.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sammy, anything for you?
I'm gonna make a shout out to our Instagram page. We're going to start posting a couple of film choices. And we'd love, our viewers' feedback on, you know, upcoming movies that we're going to review with our guests. We're going to give you a couple suggestions, and I'd love some input.
Yeah.
Just to see what people are interested in these days, you know?
Yeah.
Just some back and forth, some engagement.
Yeah.
So that's coming up the next week. We're going to hand you a couple, see what the world thinks, and then we're going to talk about them.
Cool.
Yeah.
And we'll shout you out.
You can find me on all social media, but go to my website, GabePacheco.com, and I'm going to be in St. Louis on November 8th and 9th at 9:30 for the Flyover Comedy Festival, and I will be in Boston on November 13th for the Boston Comedy Festival. And anytime you want to come see live comedy, come out to Funhouse Comedy every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. at Cantina Royal in Williamsburg.
Really cool venue, man. Mm.
Yeah, so thank you all for listening to Eat, Pray, Judge, and we will be back next week with another banger.
Rate, review, subscribe.
Yes. I hit a high note because of the way that she was walking. We got into the groove. I didn't bust no hip-hop moves. I just kept it nice and smooth. Next thing you know, we got together. Where I thought we'd be forever. Didn't have